Hey folks, we've got a new workshop coming up that I'm really excited about. This is a topic that I don't talk about a whole lot on the show. This is September 23rd at noon, and this is going to be about debt. I find a lot of the teaching on this particular topic is not so great. It's very one-sided, or it misses a lot of detail that I think really needs to be addressed. You know, how do we get into it? We talk about that a little bit, but there, you know, some people say, well, you'd get into it because of lack of discipline. Well, no, it often is more nuanced than that. We're going to be talking about how do you get out of it? How do we change our mindset regarding it in lots of different ways? Some of the best advice I was ever given was like over 30 years ago that helped me a lot. And I'm going to share some of that in the workshop. And we're going to talk about the little known facts and myths about credit scores. A lot of people don't understand how credit scores work. So I'm going to get into that. And people ask about, now, Paul, what about 30 versus 15-year mortgages? And people think you always do one or the other. And that's more nuanced as well. And I'm going to be talking about strategically when to use one versus another and some of the thinking regarding that. So it's going to be a great workshop. I'm really excited about it. September 23rd at noon. Join us, and you can click in the show notes to sign up or go to paulwinkler.com/debt. We'll see you there.
Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
And welcome. This is the Investor Coaching Show. I'm Paul Winkler. Talk about money investing, paulwinkler.com website. Educating investors, because I think the more educated investor will be the more successful investor, because they don't panic and worry and second guess themselves when it comes to investing money. You know, often why do we fail as investors? We second guess ourselves. We do something, it doesn't work, then we jump out, and then all of a sudden it does work after we've jumped out. And then we go to the next thing that worked in the previous period of time, and then that doesn't work out, and then we jump out of that, and you know, we go from one thing to another. And investment advisors we see do the same exact thing. Now, studies show, you know, that if you look at the returns of investment advisors with versus clients, it's not a big difference. Last time I saw a study like that, they stopped the study because it was being funded by the investment industry. And when it wasn't looking so good from the investment industry, major brokerage firm, back, that's where I came from, the brokerage industry. Back in the 1990s, that's probably in the 1980s as well. I went through the 1980s, late 1980s, 1990s, and then I finally said, I can't do this anymore. And of course, studying under some academics that I had that went on to, one went on to the win the Nobel Prize in Economics for investing. More about that in a second. But it was one of those things where I just, man, this industry is messed up. Well, I was having a conversation with a lady just a couple days ago, and she was actually mother-in-law of one of my friends. And he said, hey, you would talk to her? And I said, yeah, I'd love to talk to her. And you know, I started thinking about explaining things to her, and she comes from a Christian perspective. And you know, I said, you know, about investing. She didn't have any experience, didn't know anything about it. And I thought, you know, this would actually make a good radio segment for me to talk a little bit about the Bible and investing. Yeah, you know, because you hear always people talk about, you know, debt. You know, debt in the Bible, you know, borrower servant to the lender, and you know, don't and a lot of stuff is taken out of context that I'm not gonna get into. But you know, a lot of times people don't talk a whole lot about the investing side that's actually in the Bible. And I was thinking about, and she had brought up actually the parable of the talents, right? You know, the parable of the bags of gold, or the parable of the talents as it's sometimes referred to. And it's, you know, this man is going on a journey, and his servants, he's entrusting his wealth to them. And he gives one of five bags of gold, and the other one two, and the other one bag. And he says, each according to their ability. You know, so apparently he didn't think a whole lot of the ability of the one he gave only one bag to. But anyway, I digress. He gives different amounts to different servants. And, you know, he comes back. He goes on this journey long ways away, and he comes back. And the one, of course, as you know, if you know the Bible story, one turns the five bags into 10. He doubles it. And the one that he had, you know, given to... he had given the two bags to, turns it into four, and the one that he'd given one bag to, you know, said, you know, I didn't do anything with it. Well, what'd you do with it? Well, I buried it in the ground because I knew that you were a hard man, and you had harvested where you had not sown and gathered where you had not scattered seed, and I was afraid, and I went out and hid it in the ground. And here's what belongs to you. He gives him back his gold, and the master's pretty mad. You know, wicked, lazy servant. You knew I had harvested where I have not sown and where I had not gathered seed. You know, I gather and where I had not scattered seed. And, you know, you should have at least put it in the bank with interest is the way it's put there. And she says, well, you know, I says, what do you get out of this? She goes, well, I want to be a good steward with this. I want to be a good steward with what I've got. It's been sitting in cash for a long time, and cash isn't earning anything. It's basically less than 1%, and inflation's 2%, so I'm losing money every year. So I just want to be a good steward. And I said, yeah, you know, that's pretty much what you look at as being a steward of what you're given. And, you know, if you look at what it talks about being steward, that's a pretty big deal when it comes to money. You know, instead of being, you know, grab onto it and hold onto it with all your might, it's being a steward of what you're given. And some people do just bury money in a bank account, and that's what they do. They're afraid. They're scared of what's going to happen. They don't understand the stock market, and that which I don't understand, I tend to fear. That's what I often tell people is, you know, it's good if you understand the stock market, you understand what you're doing, why you're doing it, it's not a source of fear anymore, and that's why I think it's so important to learn and be educated about these things. Now, if you look at the regrets of seniors, there's studies where they go, hey, if you had to live your life over again, what would you do differently? And one of the big regrets of seniors is not taking risks. In other words, trying to make it safely to death. And the reality of it is, you're not going to make it safely to death. You know, if there is no risk, there is no reward. We know that over and over again in life. And often people get to the end of their lives and they go, you know, I didn't take a risk. I didn't stick my neck out. I didn't do anything that was of any risk. And now here I am older and I can't do anything differently. And it's kind of a sad thing. I look at it that way. And you look at what people do with money and investing, and I've seen people that pass away and they've got, you know, this money in these CDs and their kids inherit these CDs. And I just think, wow, what that would have been. And how people could have been helped if they had actually stepped out and taken risk and just invested prudently rather than just kind of burying it in the bank account. And if you look at risk in investing, risk is not what we think of. Risk is, oh, I could lose all of this stuff. As I always say, if the stock market goes down and never comes back up, that means earnings went away. And if earnings go away, that means that taxes go away. If taxes go away, it means the government goes away and the banks go away. You know, so in reality, we're worried about the stock market going down and never coming back. Could it happen? Yes, it could happen. But then everything else is for naught as well. You know, so I look at it, it's all connected. But risk in investing is just not knowing what the return will be year by year. If you look at stock market declines, as you've heard me say, if you listen to this show, since 1946, the average amount of time it takes for the market to completely recover from a stock market decline is 111 days. Some it's a little bit longer, sometimes it's a little bit shorter. But in reality, you know, I have one of my most popular videos that I've ever done out there on the internet. I think it's someplace out there. I'm too old for this. I'm too old for a stock market decline. And I think people watch that video because that's the way so many people feel. I'm too old for a decline, and I actually went through history in that video going all the way back to the 1930s. And I showed, hey, look, it's not nearly what you think it is. You hear about people losing everything in the Depression. Why? Because they went and lent money, or they borrowed money, excuse me. The companies lent them money to invest in more stock, and when the stock market went the wrong direction, they had margin calls, and they lost everything. Or they invested in individual stocks, you know, one of the two. So you look at what is risk, it's just volatility. And it's just going to be, that's the nature of things. It goes up and it goes down. And the downturns don't typically last all that long. The very worst one was 1929, 1932. And then market recovered significantly, even in the midst of the Great Depression. It recovered significantly, 1933, 34, 35, 36. Now that's one thing. Now if you look at Proverbs 13:11, it says, wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it. anything about get rich quick schemes that people get involved in. This is another thing I think is a really bad idea. You know, people try to get rich, you know, buy tech stocks, oil and gas, gold, Bitcoin, whatever. And a lot of times, why do people do that? And as you get into your 50s, you're going, oh man, I have not saved enough for retirement and I'm starting to get tired. I don't want to work forever. I can't work forever. Maybe health is starting to fail. Maybe the body's starting to fail, whatever. And they're behind in their savings. So I got to make up time. I got to get rid of all my expenses and buy those zero cost funds, and you're not realizing that you're paying way more than you think you are. Or I've got to take big risks and I buy funds based on, you know, past performance, historic returns. I look for the best performing funds or the great story out there about how people have gotten rich in this particular fund or this particular area of the market. I got to hit a big stock. I've got to scour the internet for advice on the best funds. And what am I doing? I'm chasing past performance. It's like that guy that was talking about, you know, five mutual funds you own for life. And what he does is he tells you five funds that had great performance for 5 years, 5 to 10 years. That's it. And all five funds own the same stocks. And you go, and you look at that and go, what's the demand for that kind of junk? I mean, good grief. How many views did that guy have on that video? 451,000 views of five index funds to get this huge future balance. And that's what people will jump into, not realizing they're buying something that is way, way overpriced compared to everything else. Not that the price is wrong, but the price is so high compared to the earnings that you're getting or the book value you're getting when you buy those companies right now that were in those funds that he was recommending. So you are buying super, super high, and this guy has absolutely no accountability to anybody for the advice that he's giving. Makes me crazy. But back to this, here's what people are doing, trying to hit it big. And maybe they hate their job, they want to get rich and retire, whatever. But getting it hastily, wealth hastily gained, dwindles because, you know, you look at it, your motives are all wrong, number one. And the problem is getting rich quickly is a great way to go broke quickly. You know, stocks are there to preserve wealth. That's why we invest in the stock market, not to hit it out of the park. We get it to preserve wealth. When I put all my money in CDs or fixed income investments, it is very subject to inflation. If the dollar's value goes down because the government does something untoward, the Fed does something untoward, the dollar drops in value, you're stuck if you have all your money in bank accounts. You look at where people lost all their money back in Germany, you know, Brazil, Chile, Venezuela. It was hyperinflation due to the fact that their currency dropped in value. Now, if you own stocks, you're okay. Why? Because the companies that make products go, you know what? The dollar's not worth anything anymore. I'm going to charge in another currency for our product because your dollar isn't worth anything. You know, so stocks help preserve wealth. It's not there to hit it out of the park, though, is my point. Now, we always hear about winners in the stock market. People that really, they got it good, they got in at the right time, they got the right stock, they did it right, and that emboldens people. Oh man, look, I can really, and this lady actually brought that up. She was talking about real estate. And she says, you know, I hear people say that, you know, I should be buying real estate with this money, and I've, you know, people pushing me to do that. And she said, you know, I've heard so many stories of loss, I don't think that's a really good idea. And I was like, good for you paying attention. Real estate is a job. It's not a bad thing to own. I have some real estate. Vast majority of what I have is in the stock market, but I do own some real estate. But the reality of it is this. You look at that and it's a job and you better have some skill. And there are a lot of risks that you may not be terribly familiar with. There may be all kinds of things regarding interest rates and market cycles in real estate and bubbles and you know, might have tax changes that can affect real estate values. Think back to the 1986 tax laws. When all of that changed, real estate dropped significantly in value and you almost couldn't give it away because some of the tax advantages, a lot of tax advantages went away. And you know, think about it right now. We were able to depreciate an appreciating item. And how long is it before the government figures out that that's kind of something that they can hit? Who knows? You know, so it might be a tax break that goes away and all of a sudden drops the value of real estate. So there are all kinds of risks and people don't realize it's just an undiversified asset. And when I own stocks, I own real estate because I've got real estate in the portfolio because of the fact that companies own real estate. I already have exposure to that. But you also have, you know, Proverbs 28:20, faithful man will abound in blessings, but whoever hastens to be rich will not go unpunished. The Bible has a lot to say about this stuff, actually, interestingly. Inheritance gained hastily in the beginning will not be blessed in the end. Let me hit another area, Ecclesiastes. And this is written mostly, most people believe pretty strongly that Solomon was the writer of this, you know, the richest, most wise king ever to walk the planet almost 3,000 years ago. And it's interesting because you look at this and you go, hey, does this have any bearing on today and any of the research that's been done in the investing markets? And actually it does. Ecclesiastes 11. Ship your grain across the sea, for after many days you'll receive a return. Invest, let me not skip that. Ship your grain across the sea. So you got actually international trade going on right here, right? International investing, maybe think something a little bit about that, is possibly, right? Think about that. It's something that we typically don't see a lot here in America. We tend to be very America-centric. Matter of fact, one of my professors, the one that actually went on to win the Nobel in economics, one of the guys I used to go around the country, wherever he was teaching, I wanted to see what he had to say. And he talked about that. He would say that, you know, most American investors put most of their money in U.S. companies. He says most Australian investors put most of their money in Australian companies. Japanese investors put most of their money in Japanese companies. Because we are very ethnocentric. We are very focused on our country of origin. And you know, the reality of it is that there are a lot of other countries out there, right? And we just focus on one, it's pretty myopic. So the second verse says, invest in 7 ventures. Yes, in 8. You do not know what disaster may come upon the land. Now, what is that? That's diversification. Now, interestingly, there is something called multi-factor investing. There are various factors that drive most of your returns. How much do I have in small companies versus large companies? That would be one factor. You know, small companies and large companies do not move in tandem with each other. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But you'll have years like 2001 where large companies went down, small companies went up. You know, in the late 1990s, large companies did much better than small companies. It was the other way around. Then in the 2000s, small companies did way better than large companies. And you'll have decades, you know, international, we can talk about international versus U.S., decades that international does better than U.S., and some decades U.S. does better than international. You know, so you got those factors right there, you know, small and large. That's a single factor, as we would call that in investing, your small cap versus large cap effect. Then you have value versus growth investing. Value stocks would have a low price. Now, there are a lot of value funds out there. And let me tell you, they're not necessarily value stocks in those value funds because the industry has 3 different definitions of value. And a lot of times it may be that companies they think are undervalued or mispriced, they're improperly priced, or companies that may have low prices compared to earnings, which is not another bad indicator, really. You know, some companies, you know, there are analyzing software programs that look at price to earnings, price to sales, and price to book, and they look at those combinations to determine value. I look at just price to book. That's really what the guy that won the Nobel Prize really taught us to look at is book value. And there are other factors besides that I won't get into. It gets too complicated for radio. But here's the thing. If we look at that, that's the second factor. Value versus growth. And we see that value stocks outperform growth stocks in 96% of 20-year periods. But there are periods of time where growth does better than value, so we want to own both. So there's your second factor. And your third factor is your stocks versus bonds. And how much do I have in stocks versus bonds? Well, you look at us, invest in 7 ventures, yes, 8. You don't know what calamity or what disaster will come upon the land. We think about it, you got large growth, large value, small growth, small value, in all markets around the world, so U.S., international, emerging markets. So there are 4 of your 7, right? Short, intermediate, and ultra short-term bonds. There's 7 right there, if you think about it. That would be one way to look at it. So you want to keep your bonds. Your bonds are there for safety. Intermediate bonds, which are maybe they're going to mature in 5 years or so, they tend to shoot up in value significantly if interest rates go down. They also tend to shoot up if stock markets drop significantly. So that's a good area to market. You'll have the bonds that are 2 to 3 years in maturity. Those would be the kind of short to intermediate. And those types of bonds tend to not shoot up a whole lot, but they get a little bit higher interest rate than the super short stuff. Now, the super short stuff never goes down. And so those would be three bond asset categories that you might have in a portfolio, and keep it very, very high quality bonds in the portfolio, very short duration to intermediate at most, which is 5 years. In other words, duration is how much interest rate risk. So that's what we're looking for there. You can look at maturities, but duration is a better measure of interest rate risk. So you look at that and go, oh, look at that. There's something else. And that won the Nobel Prize. That multi-factor approach to investing won the Nobel Prize in 2013. Oh my goodness, written about 3,000 years ago in Ecclesiastes. Go figure. Go figure. Now, clouds are full of water. They pour forth rain on the earth. Whether a tree falls in the north or south, place where it falls, there it will lie. Verse 4. Whoever watches the wind will not plant. Whoever looks at the clouds will not reap. What's that telling us? Well, if we're sitting there watching what's going on, what's going to happen in Washington? What's going on over in Europe right now? What's going on in Afghanistan? What's China going to do next? You think about it. If I'm watching the wind, I'm not going to plant. I'm worried that the wind might be blowing the wrong direction, and I'm not going to even bother investing, planting. Right? I'm not going to invest because I think maybe the wind's going to blow the wrong direction. Same thing with investing. If I think that something China's going to do is going to be bad for the U.S., or I think something Washington's going to do is going to be bad for my investment portfolio, I won't bother investing. And how many times have we done that? Warren Buffett actually had a great line. He was talking about one of the biggest mistakes investors make is they wait for a downturn in the market before they invest. They're just sitting waiting for some big decline in the market so they can buy low. And they miss out on all of the up, and then finally the downturn occurs, and it doesn't go down as far as it was if they had invested in the first place. And they miss out on all of that gain. You know, so it was like Alan Greenspan, a Fed chairman, 1996. Oh, the markets are irrationally exuberant, telling everybody, oh, the market's overvalued. We're talking about very smart people can get pulled in on this. The market's way overvalued. It's going to come down. Well, it didn't come down for like 4 years. And it never went down to the level it was in 1996 when he said that. So some really bad advice a lot of times that gets us caught, or bad instincts that tell us to wait until the market turns down. Watch the wind before you plant. Or whoever looks at the clouds will not reap. Maybe I go, ooh, I'm looking at the clouds and they look maybe favorable and I'm not going to reap. I'm not going to pull my money out of this investment because I think the sky's the limit. It's going to keep going up. It's going to keep going up. When you think about that, what is all of this? It's all tactical asset allocation or market timing, which won the Nobel Prize in 2013, efficient market hypothesis, that this is a waste of time. Don't engage in this type of thing. And you look at the empirical research and the evidence-based research over the past 30, 40, 50 years, and it's pretty clear that this is not a really good way of investing, trying to figure out where things are going to go next. And yet it was written about 3,000 years ago. Like, wow. Another one, sow your seed in the morning. And at the evening, let your hands not be idle. For you do not know which will succeed, whether this or that, or whether both will do well equally. What's that telling us? Well, you think about it, you're sowing at different points in time, or what you're doing, think about it this way, is you may have a different period in the day that things will do well versus one versus the other, or think about it this way, when I invest in different types of operations, different size companies, different types of companies versus value versus growth, or U.S. versus international. And you don't know in any given year whether both areas of the market are actually going to go up, or one will succeed and the other one won't. This is, again, diversification, but it's doing it based on dissimilar price movement. In English, if I have two things and they move together positive one correlation, example I've used for years in a workshop, is bathing suit sales and suntan oil sales. Think about it. In the summer, they're both rocking. In the winter, both are not doing anything. In the summer, they're rocking again. Back and forth and back and forth. They move together. Now, if you think about it, what would I be better off doing? Bathing suit sales and winter coat sales. Because they don't tend to move together. Now, it's not quite as easy as that with stock markets because many times markets do move together. But that's what it says here. Whether both will equally do well in this particular case. You know, if you look at this and you go, wow, this is dissimilar price movement, and this is measured by using correlations. Where did this come in? 1990, Nobel Prize for Economics, based on a paper written in 1952 by Dr. Harry Markowitz. He basically said that the way to maximize expected returns for an investment portfolio with minimizing volatility is to put things together that move in dissimilar fashion. And here you have it, right here, almost 3,000 years earlier, written in the Bible. And it's just, you know, to me, you look at this and go, wow, this makes sense. And this is why intuitively this made so much sense to me in the late 90s when I was studying all of this academic research and going, yeah, this makes a tremendous amount of sense to me, and I am going to build a practice based on this. And, of course, a radio show based on this, 20 years running as of this year. And the reason being is it intuitively made sense, but it also has some pretty good grounding in some fairly old literature that has stood the test of time. And it has actually gone through the rigors of academic research and has been empirically tested over and over again, and evidence-based research backs it as well. So hence the reason I have taught the way I've taught for as long and stuck with this as long as I have. Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. If you want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. You can watch some of the videos there, and if you're not already a client, you can set up a free initial consultation. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more confident investors, and confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one.